And they'll go places that are real, and they'll go places that surprise you, and they'll give you a story that you come away and actually it's actually way richer than just the sport itself. That's the type of film that we want to make, and I think we can still get those stories to happen, but it's not easy.
Hello and welcome to Outlines, a podcast about sport, stories and the media. My name's Owen Connolly. Hope you're well. It is great to have you listening. And I'm looking forward to this one. Noah Media Group are behind some of the best and most original sports documentaries of the past decade. From the psychological test cricket epic, The Edge, to the poignant and brilliant Finding Jack Charlton and the BAFTA-nominated Hatton, to name just a few, theirs is a back catalogue full of rich, compelling and creatively rendered stories. And at the time of recording, their latest work is making headlines in the UK and beyond. Football's Financial Shame, the story of the V11, follows a group of former Premier League players in their search for justice after alleged financial abuse at the hands of once trusted investment advisors Kingsbridge Asset Management not only cost them millions saved for retirement, but also left them at the mercy of the UK tax authorities. It's put many of the group in turmoil, losing homes and facing deeply uncertain futures. But this is also a story of their quest to regain their dignity and address dangerous regulatory shortcomings to which thousands of others are exposed. The film aired on the BBC in early September, earning critical acclaim and widespread media coverage, as well as drawing questions in British Parliament. So this is a very opportune time to talk to John McKenna, who's the co-founder and CEO of Noah Media Group. John explains how his team approached the delicate task of telling the V11 tale, whether in building trust with the principals or passing complex legal and financial arguments before bringing them to the screen. And he talks about the value of the BBC as a partner on this particular release. We also explore the Noah approach to finding and telling stories, while John gives his thoughts on the creative and commercial state of the sports documentary space in 2025. If you are enjoying Outlines, then you'll be doing us a big favour by sharing episodes, subscribing to the show, and leaving a nice rating and review on your chosen podcast platform. Social media details are in the show notes too. Hopefully, this is a conversation that you'll want to tell people about. Here, on the story of the V11 and plenty more, is John McKenna. It's a busy few days then.
Yeah, it's been busy, but it's been really good to see the response. It's been great.
Yeah, I mean, how have you found that? And like, do you have any sense beforehand, because you've been sitting with this story for such a long time, of how it's going to reach people and what the response is going to be?
What do you mean when you're making it early? Do we have any sense? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, because, you know, we'll get into this in kind of the next few minutes. But, you know, this is a news-making documentary, and it's slightly different from some of the other projects that you've done and that we'll talk about in that respect. And that, you know, that a big part of the value of it is that it generates news. And you kind of got the professional, like, we need to have a comm strategy behind this, we need to have a PR strategy behind this. But then you've also got, I'm sure, kind of an emotional response as well, that you want to make sure that a story like that is resonating with people once they finally get a chance to discover it.
Yeah, I mean, you do with all your films, you want to make you can't just make a film for yourself, really. You want to make a film for an audience, and usually as wide an audience as you possibly can. I mean, well, when we first came across the story, when it first came into us, which was 5+ years ago, you know, your immediate reaction is, okay, this is a fascinating story, unheard. I didn't know it, and you realize it's going to be complex because there's lots of people involved in it, and it's also a really, really complicated subject. So there's lots of complexity in it, and part of what we can potentially talk about with it is, you know, these are also Premier League footballers. And it's money and Premier League football, and there's a certain attitude towards that, I think, from people who aren't footballers and haven't earned the money that Premier League football has earned. So you've got to sort of, you know, can you tell this story in a way that people will care? People will have empathy. People will actually get past that. So yeah, I mean, to see it go out was one thing because it was very complicated. It's been a very long time to get it to there, to get it to that point. To see it go out and reach what feels like a really big audience on the BBC was amazing. The BBC did a really, really incredible job with their launch and their launch strategy. And that was their strategy with this type of story. It's like they wanted to own the story, make it like a BBC News exclusive as well. So that they a lot of times with our films, we go out and want to get it as wide as possible on day one. Whereas this was different. It was BBC only on day one. And then you see whether it goes and whether it gets picked up beyond that. So that was their strategy. And it worked really well. They'd had success with that with other films and stories of similar ilk. So we sort of trusted them. And from our point of view, we were, you know, when we sat down and spoke to them and their wider team came into it, and they talked about, you know, it's going to be multi-platform across radio and on the front page of their website and everything like that. Then that was what we probably wanted on day one, to be honest with you. And to get to that was great. Well, that for me, you know, that's not there's a few feelings at that point in time, really, from a company point of view. But I think the biggest one was it's a real testament to the people that have worked so hard on it that the film is. The story has been told in a way that totally impartial people come to it from the news outlets and from other outlets and go, do you know what? This deserves this level of push and support because this is it's a really important story. So we have identified a story that people think is of interest to a wide audience, but B, it's also been presented and told in a way that is engaging for that audience as well. So yeah, it was a great testament, I think, to the skill of a lot of people. And that's people, you know, the director, the editor, the producers, the people that were really, really at the front end of this. But also, there's a lot of people behind the scenes working on this. There was thousands of documents and conversations, and everything has to be checked and cross-checked and checked again. And so, yeah, it was amazing to see it go out so widely. And yeah, the power of the BBC when it applies things across all its outlets is incredible.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll come back to that distribution angle for it and communications angle for it as we go, but let's walk it back. So you say you've been working with the story for a little over 5 years. How did it come to you? What was the initial kind of approach or the initial spark for the whole thing?
So I can't remember at that stage which films we just made, but we were making obviously films in sport and in football, and a co-founder of Noah is Gabriel Clark, who is a very well-known and highly regarded journalist and filmmaker. And Gabriel was approached by some of the members of the V11 with this scenario, with this story, and he had an initial meeting. And then came to me and others and said, listen, I think this is really strong. This is really, really powerful. And again, as we always try and do with this, you know, there's lots of stories that come in. It's trying to gauge, is it new? Is it untold? Do we think it'll appeal to an audience? And do we think it'll appeal to commissioners that will provide the funding to allow us to make it? You know, that's the practicality of this at this stage. And we thought, yes, we just made Finding Jack Charlton for the BBC at the time. It was pretty soon after that. And so we were able to go back into the BBC and others to see, explore interest, to see if people wanted to sort of get behind this story, and had a series of meetings with different outlets. But at that point, you do your own due diligence as well. And again, especially on a story like this, because it's got a lot of complexity in it. Mm-hmm. You know, there's accusations in it. There's people on the other side of the story. It can't just be one person coming to you and going, I think this is the case. This is what it should be. So quite early on, before we had all those wider conversations, we were introduced to other people that were working on the case. And this is a pro bono lawyers and police and investigative people involved in the investigation. And so Gabriel and others had these conversations that really substantiated, we felt, to a sufficient level that this was a story that was really worth pursuing as a company that wants to tell great stories around sport.
Yeah. And then when you're working with something with those kind of levels of sensitivity, I mean, the complexity is almost a different part, because I think there's a storytelling dimension to that, which I think we'll follow up with. But the sensitivity, first of all, because you have personal financial affairs, legally, it's, I'm sure, been a very complex and delicate operation. But you've got players coming forward with their stories that are incredibly personal. And, you know, it's an extraordinary experience watching it, because some of them, they're very frank and they're very plain in how they talk about these things. But, you know, very, very dark times that they've gone through and very difficult emotions that they've had to deal with in that period. And, you know, for most of them, I'm sure, still dealing with. So they have to trust you on that level. And then you also have to have the trust of all the principals and all of their representatives on the level of, we are going to deal with this complicated and, you know, financially sensitive information and legally sensitive information in the proper way. And we will bring in the right people to make sure that we're on side as well, if you see what I mean. You know, what pieces do you put in place when you're doing something like that?
Well, I mean, some of this we had a lot of experience with, and some of it less so. So we had to bring in experts. So certainly in terms of dealing with contributors. Now, you know, maybe not to the level of, you know, these people are going to go on national television and hopefully international television and say things about their lives that, you know, they're really tough, and they're as some of them said in the film, they're ashamed of and feel like it's, you know, they're putting their head above the parapet for the first time. So to get people to do that, you know, we've worked with a lot of our films. We've worked with people who are revisiting areas of their lives that are really difficult, or going through parts of their lives, you know, involving loss and really, you know, hard and not particularly nice moments, but very emotional moments. So I think dealing with people on a personal level, on a relationship level as a company, I think we just go about it in a way that is genuine. You know, you sort of have conversations up front about what this can be and what this can't be, and how you'll act, and, you know, and you abide by that. And even though this took a lot longer, and there's always going to be ups and downs in these processes, you know, when people are having, you know, worried about it, like, this is, you know, people are going to genuinely worry, like, they've been asked to go on camera and reveal, you know, themselves, and there's going to be days that are good and days that are not so good, and so you have to handle that. And we've got really, really good people in the company that are really good at that. And yeah, you know, I like to think, I'm involved in those conversations as well, and I like to think we handle ourselves properly and correctly, and there's a level of trust that you build. Now, you know, in a film like this, it's complicated, because you're telling a story about a circumstance, and you're going out and you're having to do your own independent work on what this story is. So we can't go and go, okay, tell us what you want this story to be, because it can't be that. This has to be independent. So that, again, that trust comes in. You've got that, you know, there's parts of the film that the V11 would want to be conveyed differently, but you can't, for legal reasons or for other reasons. You have to go your own way as the producer. So again, being able to then have those conversations and have that relationship in place, so that when that conversation is about, listen, we're not saying this because we can't, and we don't see it this way, and we're going, then they understand. Okay. So it's like, so that allows that to go as smoothly as it can. And it's not easy. And at times it's really difficult, but I think if you set up in the right way at the start and you're able to have a two-way conversation about anything to do with the film, then you've got a decent chance of getting to the end of the road in that way.
Yeah.
And then on the legals and the paperwork side, and we, again, from the BBC's point of view, there was one of the exec producers, a guy called Phil Abrams, who has worked on I don't know how many documentaries like this and panoramas, and you know, and he's an absolute expert in terms of compliance and what you can, what you can't say, and I'm making, you know, going through evidence to make sure that if you're going to say this, you're able to support it. So we had him, we had legal companies involved, and then we had producers, Emma Everett, who works for Noah and worked for Noah at the time, and others working with Emma, and Simon Corney was the exec producer on this, hands on for years, and those guys they did really, really long hours and really lots of incredible work, like, and then trying to, you know, find people who would comment, and like, you know, we need someone who can substantiate this, and we're, you know, trying to find people who would say certain things, and those contributors that you saw in the film were the result of hours and days and weeks of work,
yeah,
trying to identify the right person and getting them to come in and contribute as well as they did. So that's a very long-winded answer, Owen, but it's there's the relationship piece, which is, I think, you know, we sort of have got a lot of experience of that, and then there's the paperwork and the legal and the complexity piece on this, where the BBC suggested people that we work with, and we brought in real experts to make sure that side of things was absolutely what it needed to be.
Yeah, on that relationship side, I mean, you obviously have Gabriel involved in this case, who has a long-standing professional relationship with lots and lots of players. They know him. They, I'm sure, trust him in most cases. So that gives you, what's the expression, your reputation precedes you, I suppose, in that respect. And you have your history of telling these stories, most recently, kind of the Ricky Hatton documentary last year as well, where again, you're kind of treading into quite difficult waters. But are you saying that as well, that it's an ongoing process? You're kind of earning and then maintaining the trust of these people as things get tough, as people start saying, I don't want to be involved in this anymore, or I don't know if this is the right thing to do anymore. And you're kind of constantly sort of maintaining that footing as well.
Yeah. I mean, I don't, it doesn't very often get to the, I don't want to be in this anymore.
Sure.
But I think, yeah, you have to. Yeah. You can't just, I think documentaries have changed, sport documentaries have changed quite categorically in the last 5 to 10 years. And I think there was a period of time where it might go out once on a terrestrial channel and people would see it and then people would forget it. But now when these things go out, they stay there, and they're often legacy pieces. Now, again, V11 is slightly different to the other films we've made in the main, but they're films that stay there forever. And as long as the rights allow them to stay there, the sports rights that you're able to afford. But so therefore, I think the people involved, they are aware of that, and they are right to be at times nervous about it. And so having a conversation, do you want to do it up front? And this is why, and this is what it will be, and this is why we think it's important. And, you know, I think with Ricky, you mentioned that, you know, he was ready to talk about his life and it felt like the timing was good. But then I think you know, and then in the production process, you are naturally going to get an improved relationship, because the team is working with that person regularly, you know, meeting them, interviewing them, getting to know them. So then I think there becomes a better built relationship. But then as you get towards transmission, it starts to get closer to the reality and the edits shaping up, and then in comes some nerves, and you've got to then sort of, like, you know, how good your relationship has been built at the start allows that to be a trust process that goes either smoothly or it's more challenging. You know, I hear other producers talk about how they're working with people and they don't need to come in the edit, they trust them implicitly, and they don't need to see anything, and away they go, and that would be amazing. Now, we don't let people in the edit and we don't give anyone editorial control, but you know, I think people have a right to see what their contribution is, and to see that you've portrayed them in a correct way. And I'd always, I think we have editorial accuracy is what we offer people. Like, so we'll show what they've said and we'll show the context, and then have a conversation. And again, it comes back to how honest and true and trustworthy you've been at the start. When you set out at the start, this is the film we want to make. If you're down at the end, it's completely different. I think you're going to be in a bit of bother. And yeah, we've not been in that scenario. We made a film a few years ago called Villeneuve and Peroni, which was two families in this moment in time. in F1, both saw it completely differently and trying to get to a point where that film was able to have both families happy with the film at the end. Well, actually, where it got to was neither family was over the moon with the film, but both understood that they that had been represented properly.
Yeah.
And therefore, the point we said to both was, listen, both sides have got issues here, which means that we're in the right space. And both sides understood that. And then, actually, I'm saying both sides weren't happy with the film. That's not true. They would have liked it to be slightly different, but it's ours, right? It can't be theirs.
Yeah, yeah. A couple more questions about V11, and then we'll kind of go into the wider Noah Media Group story. I mean, the financial and legal complexity of it is one thing. Then you have the sort of the emotional and the human component of that story. While it is about footballers, and as you say, there's a degree of cynicism that maybe you're overcoming when it comes to footballers and their money, there's two parts of that that I think lots of people will appreciate the difficulty of. One is that these are all guys who have not pissed their money away, to speak frankly. They've done the right things as far as they were concerned in their 20s. They put some money aside. They've taken counsel from people they trust on, you know, what they should be doing with it. And they have been kind of taken advantage of or betrayed in the, mm-hmm. in their, you know, as far as we're aware on their side. And, you know, the people that they're accusing of that had their right to reply in the documentary as well. But the other element of it is you have a story that is, you know, word gets used a lot, doesn't always fit the billing. It's a Kafkaesque story. These guys have been told you're the victims of a crime, but we're holding you financially accountable for the crime at the same time. You know, what were your thoughts when you had all of that? And then you also had the fact that it's a moving story and you have to keep the audience and its comprehension in mind when you're presenting all of these facts. How, you know, what kind of conversations did you have about the best way of telling that particular story?
Yeah, it's not easy. And I think the director, Rich Milway, and the editor, Andy Hewitt, did an amazing job with keeping that, what is a financial, complicated story going and be engaging, or keep it engaging. It's not easy, I would say, Owen, is the main thing to say. And I think that, it takes time. It takes a lot of people. I think Gabriel's amazing. Gabriel, obviously, we set the company up together. I think he's an unbelievable storyteller. And I think he looks for stories that we might talk about this later. But he looks for stories that's got these multi layers, and it's almost like the more layers that are in it, the better it is for Gabe. But I think that makes it very difficult then to sometimes tell those stories unless you can really lay that out and do it properly. So we look for stories that are complex. We look for stories that have got multiple layers that I think make it more interesting. Then you've got to try and find people who are able to present them in a really clear way. That's really, really good directors. Sometimes that's Gabriel as director. This time it was Rich Milway. And then you're looking for editors who can really understand that the pacing of that story. So pacing over 90 minutes or 75 minutes or whatever it may be is really important. And then there's it's a process of you know, multiple cuts where you'll have a first iteration and it'll look terrible, but it doesn't go out the building. There's a first internal cut, and then there's a second internal cut, and then there's a first external cut that goes to the commissioners or the investors, and that's, you know, that's nowhere near what the first cut would be. I think if they saw the first cut, they'd be terrified. With this one especially, like with the finances, we had lots and lots and lots of conversations around, I don't understand it. I don't understand it. It's too complicated. It's too complicated. And I think, you know, we had to simplify and not go into the levels of detail potentially because it was too complex. But the graphics obviously helped and the way that could be laid out. But it's a refining process. It's challenging it again. It's then bringing in other people into the story to see it for the first time with fresh eyes quite late in the process, who are good people as well, who know what they're talking about when it comes to making documentaries, that will come in and go, right, and be brutal. Like, don't be frightened of really brutal criticism. Like really, really pull it apart. And again, that's something that I think we've got internally, that I had to sit down with a few people who come in and work on our films and go, listen, right, this is going to feel like it's a dagger to the heart, but it's really not. It's really not. This is totally all to try and make your film as good as it can be. And those notes come in and they are like, oh, you know, you're like, you read them and you're like, flipping heck, yeah. But you have to take them all on, but it's all of that, which then hopefully in this case presents a story where they're, you know, victims of crime, yet still liable for the finances. This is where the money went. This is how the money was how it moved and what happened with it. These are all the people that are involved. And then you've got the individual stories of all the different players as well. You've got the modern day story of how they're trying to get things moving in Parliament. So you've got all these narrative arcs that all have to work. And there's different ways of doing it. Some people I know go into an edit for a year and find the film in the edit. That's never been the way that we've done it. I think a lot of ours is done on paper before we go in, and it's put down and it works. And we might come and talk about a couple of other things later, but that's all come from Gabriel and the way he structures. He structures on paper and he structures in an incredible way. And a lot of that has come from our background, which was, we've gone to 90-minute films and series from making 3-minute features, 5-minute, 7-minute features of in sport, which is, you know, you have to go in. And I'm old enough to be doing those edits before it was Avid and Premiere. It was on tape, and you'd go in and you'd be laying stuff to tape. And if you had to then, see, I'm older than I'm younger than I look. older than I look. No, which way around? I can't think. But like you'd have like a piece for, and you start laying it down and you're actually committing it. You're building it as you go and it's done. And so you'd have to have it all down broadly on paper as you went, and you'd make it like that. And we talk about that a lot, me and a lot of the producers and directors that come in, about the skill that enabled means that, you know, you're going into that first day of the edit and you've got a sort of structure that you feel works on paper. Yeah. Now, the beauty now is you can change it. You don't stick to that, but it gives you a real sense of, okay, there's a story that makes sense here.
Yeah. Did it always make sense that, I mean, you said it kind of grew from, you know, development conversations you had with the BBC after finding Jack Charlton, but did it always make sense as a story for a national broadcaster to be able to pick up and run with a bit? You know, there's the post office. I know it wasn't a documentary, but that story at the start of last year, kind of, it had more legs perhaps because it wasn't a sort of small band theatrical release that a lot of documentaries would get, or, you know, mm-hmm. it wasn't something that you tried to push out independently. It was sat there. It had the marketing. It had the conversation starting capacity that national broadcasters still have. Was that always something you thought was the right match?
It was always very high up on our hopes. Yeah, I mean, it felt like it was the right home. If other like streamers or multinational organizations had come in, then obviously we'd have had those conversations. And we did have some conversations with other parties that were interested in the story, because it's actually a story that spreads beyond the UK in sport. So it was a story that could have gone much wider potentially, but then, you know, the complexities, would we have got there? Could we have joined those dots at that stage? Possibly, maybe we could have, I don't know. And then, you know, lots of people are assessing whether this is going to work for their audiences internationally. I think what this was from day one, when it came into us and, you know, in those early conversations, was like, okay, I get this for a UK audience. It's in the Premier League, at the start of the Premier League, when the money came into the Premier League, this felt like, you know, it's the national sport. It's a nationally important conversation because it's wider than football. It's not mm-hmm. just affecting players. This feels right for a UK broadcaster. So yeah, where it's ended up is exactly, I think, as we said at the start, it's where we would have hoped for on day one. But then, you know, massive testament to the BBC, right? So this is a BBC Storyville Commission,
yeah,
which is their documentary, one of the documentary arms. And they backed it. they backed it and have stayed with it way longer than I think we all thought it would take to get to finishing the film and getting it broadcast. And then they put, and then they gave it a 9 o'clock BBC Two slot, and then they gave it all the media support. So they really, this could have been in another iteration, none of that. It could have been, a different channel and a later slot and without any of the media support. And we'd have been very proud of the film, but it wouldn't have had the conversation and ended up in PMQs day after broadcast. And who knows if it's going to, there was big pieces this weekend as well in some of the papers. It's been brilliant to see. So I think it got the best home it could have got. And then that home gave it the best support it could have done. So that's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. How central are those conversations now? We'll talk about kind of the documentary business more widely a little bit before we finish a bit later. But like, how early in a project are you thinking, well, where will this go? Particularly in your seat, right? If you're the director, you might not, or you're the kind of your originator of the project, you might feel slightly differently about it. But for you having to think about all these different bits, how do we get it made? Who do we bring in, et cetera, et cetera? How do we budget it? How early in the process are you thinking this feels like maybe it could be a streamer? Maybe this one goes to, limited runs in cinemas as I'm Carl Lewis, which we'll talk about in just a sec, has done. What's how much bigger a part of that conversation is it in documentaries maybe than it might be in other parts of media?
I don't know about whether it's bigger in documentaries or not. I mean, the reality is for us as a production company is you have to back to get a project to be real. Now you have to put a lot of time and effort and resource yourself into it, and you don't get any money for it. So that's the fundamental reality in this world now. So there is a bit of paid development you might get occasionally, but that's not massively forthcoming, and it's certainly not in our experience. And so to really get stuff going, you've got to prove that it's a story that's worth telling. So that then comes down to two things: creatively and commercially. Do we think we're going to get this to happen? And we have to make those decisions really quite early and be really quite brutal with them. Unfortunately, because there are so many stories that come in, and I'm not the best at this, right? I literally fall in love with these stories left, right, and center. I'm like, oh my God, we have to do this. This is amazing. And then more sensible people come up and shake their heads at me. But you have to, so that assessment is, from our point of view, we have to say no to a lot of things that come in, unfortunately. And part of that is, okay, it's an assessment. Creatively, has it got all the layers we want? Is there unseen archive? Is it saying something new? Is it the type of thing that we think is currently getting commissioned and people are investing in? And okay. And then that second part comes over to this side as well. Is the type of thing that is going to get commissioned and people are investing in? And who is that going to be? And, we do have regular conversations with commissioners. You have to understand as best you can where the market is and what's happening with it, and that is that commercial piece is critically important, because if you say, right, we want to bring this onto our slate, and that's the way we work, and I think most companies work, you have a slate of projects you're working on to try and get them to go into production. That takes development time, that takes senior time, that takes meetings, finance meetings, going out, meeting the people, starting those relationships we talked about earlier. Potentially you go and film with them a little bit, because there's more, the bar to get things going is harder and harder. You might have to go and commit yourself to go and film with someone, show how good they are on camera, turn that into a sizzle, do a deck that explains the layers of the story. That people expect that to look good now. That's not just a piece of A4 anymore. That's like with images and design. So it's a big commitment to get it in front of people who are going to say yes or no. So for you to do that and say, right, well, we think this is good enough, you have to have done your own commercial appraisal. Otherwise, you're wasting your time.
Yeah. How much does, I mean, we haven't really talked about the sort of Noah Media Group story other than in sort of dispatches, but how much do you now also have a sense of this is our wheelhouse, this is our brand, and this is the type of story that we tell? Or how much do you apply that lens afterwards, if you see what I mean? You'll accept the story and then you'll say, how do we tell it in our way?
No, we will choose the stories that we feel are right for us.
Yeah.
And there's a genuine, our own rationale for that, which is, you know, the reason we set the business up and the type of stories we want to tell, predominantly around sport. We've done a few subjects outside of sport, but I think, you know, we'll gravitate back to sport in the main, but more than, what's the more than? Someone once said to me, actually, what we're interested in is the, but it's really about. So every film we've made, it's a film about Ricky Hatton, but it's really about where Ricky is in his life, mental health, family, Bobby Robson's a film about this superstar manager, but it's really about a life well lived and well loved, and, you know, coming to the end of your life and your legacy. So what's the, but it's really about? And I think has become the brand, and the brand becomes the brand because of what you make.
Yeah.
It's films about sport, but actually it's way more than that, and it's way deeper than that. It's multi-layered, and it's that's what's fascinating to us, and hopefully that's what's fascinating about our films. But also the other side of that is that then becomes, you then become known for making those films. So then when I or others go in to see a commissioner, a streamer or a channel, then you're going in and you're talking about a film that it makes sense that Noah are making it. You know, I'm not coming in and talking about entertainment or, a sort of made in Chelsea. Well, I love that, but I'm not. Because we wouldn't be the right producers for that. And, they would see that, and I would know that, really. So,
yeah.
It works. That the brand has become what it's become because of the films we've made, and hopefully. And that's really... we're very proud of that, and I'm very proud of that, and want that to continue and continue and continue. But then what that also means is that then when we go in and have conversations, we are able to go, like, you know, it gives you that level of trust. So you talked about earlier when you've got to get all these stakeholders in, they're going, yeah, are you going to deliver this and this and this? Because it's very, very, you know, there's lots of things to make a film get to the end of its production and out into the world. Then the people that are going to back that also trust you because you've done it before.
Yeah. A film that you've got coming out that is maybe of a piece with some more recent ones you've done, it's sort of an athlete bio or an athlete, I don't know, docu-memoir, how you'd say about a short piece of someone's career in life, is I'm Carl Lewis, which when I contacted you candidly to talk about this podcast, that was the thing I thought we'd probably spend the time talking about. I still haven't seen it, so it would be a bit waste of our time to do so. But and you know, you could tell me, but couldn't tell me about V11 at that point. But what can you tell us about I'm Carl Lewis, and how does a project like that come together, where it's kind of self-evident why you tell a story about Carl Lewis, right? Because he was this huge iconic figure of a specific period in sporting history, and, you know, arguably in kind of American cultural history as well.
So. Yeah, nobody in the UK has seen I'm Carl Lewis yet, because it's not out in the UK yet. So it premiered at South by Southwest in March, really brilliantly. The screening was amazing, and it had then several screenings afterwards. The world of these films and how they get to market is, like, it's evolving so... so much, like, no one of them's got the same route to market. So with Carl, it's premiered 6 months ago. We've got a sales agent attached relatively recently, a really, really good sales agent. It's going to be taken to MIP in October, and I'm expecting, hoping that we're going to be having quite a lot of sales announcements back end of this year, including the UK, where it'll start to then land on platforms around the world. It's going to premiere in the US and Japan later this month around the World Athletics Championship. So there's an initial deal that's been done there, and then there's more interest coming, but we're going to group it all with this agent now. It's gonna be sold around MIP in October, so next month. And then hopefully, yeah, we'll be able to start talking about that a lot more. Carl's an interesting one because it's, as you say, he's a name that resonates globally, obviously, you know, so it should have interest in every country around the world, which is brilliant. And then secondly, you've got LA 28 coming in a couple of years' time. And obviously, Carl was the last time the games were in LA, got 4 gold medals. So he's like an icon of not only the Olympics, but of LA Olympics. So there's going to be a big interest around that as well. So commercially and internationally, there's real, real strong, great opportunity around Carl. I'm very excited to see where it goes and which partners it ends up with. It's been, again, Carl's been a long time in the making, because it's such a vast story and it tells the story of his whole career. And it, again, it's that trying to find what the additional element is to a sporting story. And Carl's is like, it's asking a big question as to, like, he was named athlete of the century last century and should be in the very top pantheon of American names alongside Michael Jordan. But he isn't. And it's asking the question why, and it's looking at Carl in the 80s and this guy who was like a pioneer ahead of his time, and he pushed for money in the sport, and he was being himself, and America couldn't handle it. And his sister says in the film that he'd be the biggest sports star in the world in any other country, but not in America. And it's why America didn't embrace Carl is the fundamental what it's really about that we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating. And he goes really like into like amazing areas in the film. So I'm really excited for people to see it. It's, again, it's just been in this ever evolving world of, it's taken a while to make it. It's had its premiere, and now we're just trying to, we've now got a really good agent attached to it. And I'm really excited to see where it'll end up.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to seeing that one. I mean, what's your, How does that feed into your assessment of where the sports documentary space is kind of commercially and creatively? What does the story of a film like that tell you? You have to be kind of light-footed, I guess, and ironically enough, given the subject, in understanding how you're going to get to an audience. And you've got to think, how do we tell this story again? Because there's so much library footage out there, particularly we're now getting to the era where they might be less high profile than they were, but there's enough volume of footage of Carl Lewis that exists that you could piece a story together kind of with an afternoon on YouTube if you wanted to. So you've got to think, how do you enrich that? I mean, how would you assess where the marketplace is in a minute?
If ever evolving, and often frustrating, I think, is because it changes so much and so quickly. So we've always been we've always been a business that does sport documentary as a big part of what we do. I think if that was all we did, then I think it would be challenging, because it takes a long time to get these films into production. It takes a long time to get the films, you know, where to find their home. So it's not easy. And, you know, we do a lot of work with sports federations, and we do a lot of different types of work as well. So that allows us, that in a way, that gives us the time and space to try and choose the big films we want to make sure they're funded in the right way, and then try and make them find the right home to get out there. So, how would I assess the market? Very different to what it was 5 years ago, 4 years ago, 3 years ago. I used to go on a lot of panels where people talked about the golden age of sport documentary, and I don't think we're in that anymore. There's a lot of sport documentary being made. There's a lot of follow docs, and they're all, you know, I like them, I watch them, but I feel like there's still space for really, really high quality, brilliant films, but they're not as regular as they used to be. And I think that's when I said the word frustrating, and that's what I find the challenge. And I hope, you know, we're going to keep banging this door, and, you know, we'll get enough away for us, and hopefully we can get more and more away. But those really brilliant stories that are not they're not necessarily the A-list, a triple A-list sports star, but they're a brilliant name or an interesting name or a fascinating name. And they'll go places that are real, and they'll go places that you, that surprise you, and they'll give you a story that you come away and actually it's actually way richer than just the sport itself. That's the type of film that we want to make, and I think we can still get those stories to happen, but it's not easy.
Yeah. Is that purely a funding thing, or is that a shape of the industry thing? Is, you know, in the same way that it's been for other sectors within film and entertainment?
I think it's a shape of the industry thing. I think a shape of the industry thing, and I don't blame the industry because, as you say, there's so much content out there, and there's such a demand and a battle for eyeballs and audiences that I think there's a little bit of risk aversion. So if you have a name attached to it, then it's already going to bring an audience. So I think it's easier to commission something that is another version of something that's happened before, or it's a superstar name and it's quite straightforward and the audience will watch it. And I bet you will as well, Owen. Like, I'll sit and watch a film about, I'm going to name names here, but whoever it may be, and I'll really enjoy it. I'll watch it from start to finish. I'll have a good time. And it'll do really good numbers, and it'll break whatever records, and it's doing what everybody wants it to do, tick. But I think what V11 has shown, and the 7-day figures are not in yet, but I know it's tracking really well. And, you know, when we did Jack Charlton, he did really good numbers on BBC Two. And when, you know, though, I think if you can tell a really good story, and I think sport is really interesting, and I think there's a really good opportunity for people to think differently about how you bring an audience to it. I think if you can find, it doesn't have to be this super, super, superstar name. Be a name in sport, but people have a real affinity to clubs and people and stories. And if you can then generate, I think it's relatively easy to generate an audience around that before it lands. And I think you could do something really interesting with it. So for me, sorry, I'm going around the houses, but I think for us, if we can find these stories that are brilliant, multi-layered stories, and then we can around that generate enough interest in advance, and it can land and it can deliver those numbers. And I think that's where it needs to go. And that, you know, we did that initially with our first films. We set up our own websites, and we pushed audiences to our Bobby film and to the Edge cricket film, and we did really good numbers in those. And then we moved away from it because the market moved away from it, became about trying to get these big deals and hold everything. But I think it's coming back now. YouTube and
sure,
all the social channels that are available to you, I think you can really build an audience around a film. And that's going forwards, that's what we will and I think need to do.
Yeah. Okay, John. I mean, I could talk about several of your films all day. I think you've done fantastic work, as you know, we said in communication before we did this, but we are running up against your deadline here.
I've got to get my hair cut.
Yeah. But there's three questions that we ask all of our guests that I'll ask you before you go. The first is, do you have an origin story or something that sparked your interest in sport?
My dad. I've been interested in sport since day one. I fell into working in sport at age 21 as a runner at ITV Sport, which was an amazing team. And then came down to London, making the tea, absorbing everything. And then there became this opportunity to start to do creative things in that department and start to make 3-minute features with Gabriel for On the Ball, for those that remember that, with Gabby and Barry Venison. And then 3 minutes became half hours, became an hour, and then making the documentaries became key. So that's how I got into it. And then, but what I was thinking about this before coming on, I blame it on being an Everton fan. and I think that you don't have any joy on the pitch, so you try and go back and remember stories of old. I've listened to stories of my dad about how good Everton used to be, and maybe that's what it is. Give them some credit for once.
Yeah, you start to ask why a lot, I think, when you find certain teams.
Exactly.
What's your favourite piece of sports storytelling?
So I think my favourite piece is Graham Taylor, The Impossible Job. which was in the Fly on the Wall access documentary to Graham Taylor's England manager in 1994-93.
Yeah.
And it set unbelievable standards. I don't know if you've ever seen it, Owen, but it's like
I think I probably watched it first run, but I was a kid, so yeah, I don't remember yeah. that well. But it is a very, very common answer, I think, among people who have seen it.
It's incredible. It made it impossible to get into dressing rooms for the next 20 years, which was a disaster.
I was going to ask.
Working in live sport and trying to do storytelling around it. Like, no, you couldn't get anywhere for 2 decades off the back of it. But it was groundbreaking. And interestingly, it's like we spent 20 years trying to get in those dressing rooms and tell those stories. And now that's where it's at, isn't it? It's come full circle again. Recent years, again, you talk about sports stories that are way more than that. I think the series OJ Made in America, I think, was one that really sort of is the prime example for me of how you can take a sporting career but then go into something that is just, you know, a study of American society, which is, it's an amazing piece of work.
Yeah, yeah. The other thing with the Graham Taylor doc, I mean, you know, with Bobby Robson, you were able to take his life in the round. And with Graham Taylor, he almost had to break out beyond that story of himself as the England manager kind of later in his career. He did sort of reclaim his public image, I guess, but
he did and apparently he was a lovely man. I didn't know him, but like when he passed away, it's like the reaction when he passed away from lots of people. Like, I'm on a WhatsApp group with all my old pals from ITV, including, like, you know, people who work at, you know, commentators, reporters, everyone, and like the total unified sentiment about what a person he was when he passed away on there and everywhere else in the media was amazing.
There is a book out there called Watford Forever, which is about Graham Taylor and Elton John in the 70s and 80s. And I have heard a rumor that that's been optioned somewhere, but I would love to see that get made into a film because it's a fantastic story.
I've heard that I've also heard more than rumors that people are producing a doc film about Elton and Graham at Watford, and I hope it happens because he deserves a documentary. His family
extraordinary story.
Another documentary. Yeah.
But outside of that, what's a sports story that you'd like to tell or see somebody else tell?
So I thought about this and I couldn't come up with one answer. We talked earlier about the fact that there's so many stories at the moment that I think are struggling to be told because they don't tick those commercial safe boxes where we are at the moment. And I think that's a real tragedy that needs to be sorted. And that's the beauty of sport. Like, there's so many stories that deserve to be told. And I think whoever you are, you'll come at that with your own lens of what that should be. I was thinking there's a version of 7-Up, the great observational documentary that could be done around kids and sport now. It wouldn't be every 7 years. You pick people, the best in the country, up at 7 and you visit them every 2 years until they do a pro contract. There's that. There's a travel show around the world that goes to the most extreme locations of where sport is. And you see these clubs or teams that are changing lives in all around the world. I'd love to see a series around Gaelic sport, you know, that is amateur over in Ireland. And, you know, these are super athletes. I'm from St. Helens. I'd love to get under the skin of rugby league, but no one will pay for that, unfortunately. But that, you know, that these teams are in the heart of a community and people are getting paid nothing to almost brutalize their body every week. You know, I think that's the beauty of sport. There's so many stories that deserve to be told. It's an obsession of mine at the moment to find a different way to tell these stories, because it's very difficult to get them on the major platforms, on the streaming platforms, but where YouTube is now and where the media space has gone, I think there's an opportunity to do something really exciting with sports storytelling. And so there is not one story, there's many. And I think the evolving industry, it's at times frustrating, but it's also really exciting.
Yeah.
we've got to carry on fighting to try and tell stories that are like multi-layered and important.
Yeah, well, keep it up, John, and look forward to seeing what you come up with in that dimension, and also what else is to come from Noah Media Group. But we are over time, so thanks very much for chatting.
Thanks, Owen.
Outlines is an original production from 2640.